Welcome to The Founder's Mind. This is your host, Adam Mutchler. On today's episode, I have Roman Bodnarchuk, founder and CEO of N5R AI. To say Roman has been around the block in the technology world would be an understatement. From his first computer, to decking out his life with technology, to understanding the importance of unplugging, Roman shares invaluable perspectives and insights on building a technology company that transcends the whims of technological shifts over the years. Listen closely and tap into the wisdom Roman has cultivated over his career in technology and learn where he sees the next wave of tech is headed. Roman, welcome to The Founder's Mind.
Thank you very much.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you're working on at the moment, because I know you've got an AI platform and you're in real estate.
Yeah. So Adam, about 20 years ago, I started a company called N5R.com. And this is when the internet was just really starting to be pervasive in businesses. And we had a theory 20 years ago that the internet was going to change everything. And we were right. And about 2 years ago, we decided that AI was going to be a much bigger, more profound impact. So we renamed the company called N5R.ai. And our background has really been, our most famous success has been in the real estate space. But just to give you some background, we started in marketing of the Backstreet Boys, a band called NSYNC. We took two unknown bands that never sold an album. We helped them grow to $1 billion each in terms of hats and t-shirts and concert tickets and obviously CDs. So we built $2 billion brands in the music business. And then we figured out how to leverage the internet to build databases and do cool stuff. But really what we've been successful at is leveraging that early experience into real estate. So now we've done about $5 billion of new home sales, and we've done that in 15 countries. So we've really leveraged our knowledge of the internet and marketing and been able to go from literally, you know, when you sell new homes, you're selling air. Most of our projects don't exist. We have a rendering, a 3D rendering of a beautiful building, or in India, because a smart city. And then we translate into, you know, billions of dollars of pre-sales, and we build it. Today, what we're working on is the same thing, but using AI. So AI is helping us construct better, more incredible homes, and it's helping us automate that sales and marketing process, which is always painful. We find that anytime that humans are involved in sales and marketing, it sometimes isn't fun. It's rare when you have a great customer experience. Like when you have it, you're like, wow, you tell your friends about it. But 9 out of 10 times, you're not telling your friends about it because it sucked. So we're trying to leverage AI to make that sales and marketing experience better. And we're also using AI to make the home construction industry different. So for 100 years, we've been building houses outside, like here in DC. So you know what winters are like. So you know we're building houses the same way our pioneers did. We believe that you can do it automated in a factory the way Tesla builds cars.
Yeah.
So the way we're going to be building our homes the way Tesla builds cars.
Is the AI part of the business? Is it like a new business, or is this the evolution of N5R?
So N5R is an existing business. We've had 20 years of success. What we've been doing, because the AI talent pool is so thin, we're very fortunate to be based in Toronto. Toronto's probably among the top one or two leading AI cities in the world, because a guy named Jeffrey Linton, which started really the AI dominance the last 10, 15 years, is based here. So of the 10,000 students that we know that are actually qualified to do AI, you've got about half of them have come out of Toronto, University of Toronto. So what I've been doing, and we set up an office in WeWork, we're setting up another one next week, is looking for people that have AI technology, AI abilities, and we're acquiring them or partnering with them because this is a whole new world. So yeah. We've had the real estate background for a long time, but we're trying to leverage AI technology and bolting it onto the sales and marketing process, bolting it onto to real estate construction. So that part is new, and we are making, whether it's equity investments or partnerships in startup AI companies, but really what we're delivering our clients is a full service solution.
Cool. What got you pulled into the AI side?
So I guess I'm a geek. I'm a technology geek. And it was about 2 years ago, I was driving my Tesla, and they had just announced they did a over-the-air update, which is like a whole idea of a car making over-air update. Yeah. They said, hey, guess what? Your car drives by itself. I'm like, no way. So I had three little kids, and I trust Elon Musk. I'm like, yeah, let's try it out. So all of a sudden, the car is literally driving by itself, and the kids are astounded. They're like, Dad, the car is driving better than you are. And like, they're right, because the car has sensors and all these things that, you know, as humans, we have a lot of limitations. The technology in this car didn't have it. So once I found that I was literally driving in a car and I felt safe with three kids, I realized this is we're entering a whole new world. At the same time, I'd completely automated my house, where Alexa was running my entire house just with my voice commands. So 2 years ago, I thought, okay, so if people can automate their entire house with their voice commands of Alexa, and can we automate driving, why the hell are we going through this painful experience? You're trying to go into a store or buy something or go to a website. Like, it's primitive. So I guess for me, the lights went on 2 years ago. And it was just a profound experience of like, it was like the first time I'd seen the internet. It was, you know, Adam, you're really young, but when the internet first came out, let me tell you how useful it was. I'm at university first year. The only thing I could do with my 2400 baud modem, which made a lot of noise and took half an hour to turn on, was it was able to go into the library across the street and tell me if the book that I was going to go get was in stock. That was the only use of the internet when I started. Was like, you turn on this modem, took half an hour, I booted up, and it was able to go look at the inventory of the library and let me know if the book was in stock. It was hugely valuable to me, because in cold weather, I don't really want to go to the library and go, oh, it's not there, right? So that's where AI is today. AI is still primitive, but it's still amazing. Like, again, and I don't know how geeky you are, but let me tell you about my weekend. So Saturday night, I'm installing my new Roomba, which is now with Wi-Fi. It's my fifth Roomba, but this one's Wi-Fi. So Sunday morning, I'm in bed and I just say to my Google Home, I'm like, okay, Google, tell Roomba to start vacuuming. And like, literally, and this thing's loud, on the second floor of my house, like, the thing starts vacuuming. Like, this is all AI. All the stuff that we don't know, it's all AI. When I say to Google Home, hey, tell me about my day, and it's like, you better leave for your meeting now. You've got a meeting with this. Like, this is all AI. So AI is sort of like internet's invisible, but we are such early days. We are like back 25 years ago when I'm using the internet to find out if there's a book in a library. That's where we're at with AI. But I believe it will transform every industry, every business, much more profoundly than the internet, because there's intelligence to it. So we're super excited. I do like real estate, Adam, because it's the biggest industry in America. It's a $1 trillion business that, you know, we're trying to reinvent. So we're focused on real estate, but we're trying to leverage every AI technology we can.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you're energized about it, which I like. What I'm always curious, and I know founders that I work with and executives that I work with, there's always something keeping people up. What's keeping you up at night related to N5R right now?
So what keeps us up at night is the speed of change. So for example, I think these voice assistants are really the new operating platform. Like, I know that the world is thinking, oh yeah, it's mobile, let's build an app for it. And I think that was so 5 years ago. These voice assistants, in my opinion, are the new platform. So anything that you do in a business moving forward, it's going to be voice. And again, I don't know if you're going to be using the Apple Siri voice, if you're going to be using Alexa's voice or Google's voice, but it'll definitely be a voice platform. So for us, it's like, okay, so now we get it. We know it's AI. We know it's voice. Now we've got to figure out people that get it as well. So I think a lot of it is it's all about people. Unfortunately, it's all about people that get it and are as passionate and as energized about the future and making it different. But I feel that, you know, we've got a 20-year track record of being right about technology platforms, the way things that win. But now convincing humans to maybe work 80 hours a week, because unfortunately, you know, we live in a time and a culture where people are like, yeah, you know, work 9 to 5 and that's the new norm. You don't win a race working 9 to 5. Like, so we need people that want to work 8 to faint. You know, my favorite saying is, I think it was the founder of Hilton. He says, yeah, you can work part-time with us. You know, pick which 12 hours you want to work. So I think it's people that get it, understand the future, want to be part of it, but understand that nothing great is done in an 8-hour day. Like, it's not enough. I'm sorry, but this whole work-life balance, when you're running a race, you can create a work-life balance once you've won, but not at this stage. So that's what keeps us up at night.
How do you keep the balance?
So great question. So what I've done personally, I just tell you my own story. is Monday to Friday, I think those are work days and you can hit it really, really hard. But I do think you need time to recharge the battery. So for me, I use weekends for that. And I actually get out of the city and go to the country, and I think you need to see stars, you need to smell fresh air, and you need to see trees. And there's a lot to be said about us that live in urban cities, like, you know, half of the population now. You need to get in nature. So how I've survived kind of a crazy life is getting in nature a couple times a week and just decompressing and no electronics, and try to get off the phones. And when I get home at night, I shut off the phone. So that's how I've personally done it. I don't think we can be wired 24/7. I think that's just crazy. But I think when you work, and let's assume it was 10 hours or 12 hours, it's full on, but then you shut off. And I think the people that have a harder time is they're working 8 hours, but then they keep those electronic devices on all night. And it's like that whole like working from home and they're trying to be connected. It's really tough. I think there's got to be a shut on and shut off period. So for me, it's weekends. I try to do very little of any business at all weekends. That's a recharging. And at night when I'm home with my kids and my family, like it's off. So yeah. That's how I try to keep that balance.
Nice. Would you say you start the day on the earlier side? Some people start early, yeah. You know, some people start late.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I just don't know that many successful people that don't start early. So I think I know when you get into creative people and people like to creative, they like to sleep in, but the reality is if we surveyed the top Forbes 400, I got to tell you 80% of those guys are going to be morning guys. So, or ladies. So I think it's definitely, I err to the morning. I find that you only have so much, willpower in a day, and you start off with your gas tank full. And by the end of the day, you're burnt out. So what happens is that's when all the stupid decisions you've made in life, they're at night. You're eating bad, you're doing all the bad things at night because you've used up the willpower. So if you don't start by, like, for example, if I don't work out in the morning, it's not going to happen. If I don't eat properly, like, it's not going to happen. So I believe that, you know, and again, I think as humans, we're all the same. You've got X amount of willpower. So to do the heavy lifting in the morning is way better. So I'm 100% believer that mornings are the most productive time. So I'll tell you the thing I did. I got this from Tim Ferriss and I took it to an extreme. So I don't know if you'd read 4-Hour Work Week. Did you ever read Tim Ferriss's book?
No, I've followed his podcast and I've read articles and stuff.
It's, you know, sometimes just reading that book, it's really good. So it kind of gives you the foundation, but he starts off by going, you know, he checks emails twice a day. And that was a huge thing because I don't know about you, but I used to live on email. Like I could easily burn through 12 hours a day and feel I was really energetic and really productive and get nothing done and be on email 12 hours a day. I mean, I lived that way for a long time. And I read that book and it was like, oh shit, this makes sense. So then I was checking it twice a day. And now the only time I check emails is if I'm looking for something. So if I'm looking for something, I'll go do it. But for me to just sit and just deal with that inbound between the WhatsApp, the Skype request, that like, it goes on and on. And today, thankfully to you, I've got this new thing called Zoom. But like every day there's another platform, right? So I could spend all day just with the inbound stuff. But what I found is you get to a point where like, if it's important, they will call you. So when they call me, I know it's important and I'll go dig through the email. But I find that the greatest time waster in our society, number one, is email. But now it's social media. So my next thing for 2018 is how do I minimize my social media down to like 10, 15 minutes a day? Because honestly, it's enough. Because you could literally waste hours a day between all the platforms. So I've kind of given up email, which was hard. But you know what? I haven't really missed anything. And yeah. My next, how do I get social media down to 10 or 15 minutes a day? So that's how I'm trying to get some work-life balance. Because those hours, you can't get those hours back.
Yeah. I really like the line, you can make up for lost income, but you can't make up for lost time.
100%. And I think so much of us are worried that we're going to miss something. So we spend 80% of our time looking through nonsense.
Yeah.
Now we look, honestly, like I can tell you a crazy story. My greatest client ever, my biggest client ever, was a gentleman in India. A guy named Manpreet Chaudhary. He's building a smart city in India. And his dad is the largest landholder in the whole country. So he'd spent about a year trying to reach me. They sent me some LinkedIn requests, a bunch of emails. And here's the reality. When you have lots of domain names, and I'm sure you know this, over a couple decades, you get, you know, everyone seems to, when you register a domain, you just get tons of spam.
Yeah.
And I found a lot of it came from India. So anything from India, I just delete it. So this poor guy, which is one of the most successful, you know, wealthiest men in the world, spends a year trying to reach me because I had created all these filters for myself. But eventually, guess what happened? After a year of him sending me emails and LinkedIn requests and all this stuff, and I just ignored it all, his assistant called my assistant. Like, it was actually a phone call. Like, if somebody really wants you, they're going to pick up the phone. And the long story short, it became, you know, the single most profitable, exciting client of my life. Now, I'm sure that other people didn't go through that test. I may have lost some opportunities. But I think that sometimes in life, I would rather filter out and save myself 8 or 10 hours a day of nonsense for, you know, for the one or two great opportunities that you get. So again, that's my own personal thing. But I do find that most will waste most of their time on social media, on email, accomplishing absolutely nothing, going home exhausted, and really accomplishing nothing. So yeah, that's been my experience.
At the very least, accomplishing very little or a fraction of what you could accomplish.
A fraction of what you could accomplish.
Yeah. There's, I don't know, what you're bringing up has got me thinking about things too, but Steve Jobs always said, or at least in the beginning, like, all you have to do is pick up the phone. He said, people don't pick up the phone. And that was pre, you know, this advice and this perspective was pre-email, social media, you know, and now there's, you know, this mass outreach using digital platforms. And we forget that we can contact people or try and be more personal about it.
Listen, we, you know, there's a billion of us that carry these phones. They're attached to us. You know, we stick with them. But the one app that nobody's using is the phone app. Like, nobody's calling you. Like, nobody calls you. And when you call somebody, you break through all the clutter. Like, I could count on one hand how many voicemails I get a day. I can't possibly tell you how many emails and text messages and WhatsApp and Skype requests and go on and on. Like, it's insane. But literally, if somebody picks up the phone, calls me, I can count on one hand how many of those I get, and they get priority. So I think we're all, as marketers, we're all in sales, we're making a huge mistake, and there's something so powerful about the human voice. Nothing's more powerful than us looking at each other. This is really great.
Yeah.
But I think if you can't get on a video call with somebody, when they can hear your voice tonality, you can hear their voice, it's so powerful. Text is the least, is you know, out of us communicating, the words I'm using are the least important thing. It's 7% of communication, and you've got about 33% is my voice tonality, 55% is my body language. So if I'm just reading a text message from you or an email from you, I've lost 93% of the message. That's why most relationships end up in failure, because people are misinterpreting this nonsense. It happens every day. I don't care if it's a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a wife. We're blowing our relationships because we're relying on these stupid words that are we're losing 93% of the message. So I'm a big, big believer in what Steve Jobs said. And I'll tell you, the successful people I know, the billionaires that I know, they answer the phone. And honestly, no one's calling these guys. And once the assistant goes home at 5:30 or 6, these guys are picking up the phone. So if I want to reach Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates or somebody that, you know, these legendary guys, I'm telling you, I could do it by phone. There's no way I'm going to get to that guy on email, but I bet you by phone I could. So that's my experience.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. There's a, I think that you and I are in agreement on a couple things. And I tell clients all the time, if you have to have an important conversation with someone, please, please, please do not email them.
Right.
Have that conversation in person so you can see them, so you can understand what's going on. And read the room, basically.
Right. And I think emails and texts are great for confirming meetings, confirming things, saying documents. That's about it. But honestly, the technology is no better than the telegraph 100 years ago. None of us using a telegraph. Do you really think these 160 character Twitter messages or these text messages we haven't evolved. So anyways, I'm a big believer in the phone. And I think the most successful people I know how to use the phone. I mean, I'll give you an example. Now, whether you like him or not, Donald Trump was a client of mine for 10 years. We did a lot of projects. And he doesn't, until this Twitter thing, he didn't use a computer. So, but he answered the phone calls. He knows how to use the telephone. And it's an incredibly powerful tool. And it's a guy that never used a computer. I have a lot of successful guys that don't use computers. And I got to tell you, we would go, oh, that guy's like, he's a prehistoric dinosaur. You know what? That guy gets more done than people sitting in front of a screen all day, keeping themselves busy with nonsense, because he might make 10 or 20 calls a day and will get way more done than the person saying 100 emails.
What's the best piece of advice you've received? I know you, it's been a while since you founded a company, but as a founder and in having your own business.
The number one piece of advice I got, I was at a first year university. I'm starting my first company. And a gentleman that was very successful at the time, he came to me, goes, so what are your goals for the month? And I'm just like looking at him, what? What are my goals for the month? He says, yeah, like what is your goal for the month? Like, I'm like, so I don't know. I'm just like stuttering. He's like, if you don't write down your goal for the month, you will never achieve it. The fact that you don't even have a goal, you'll never get it. And it was the first time in my life somebody ever asked me what my goals were. And I think this is probably the most important thing in my life. Now I write everything down. And the crazy thing is I kept my journals for 20 years and I'll pick up an old journal and it's like amazing all things I wrote down. Like, I don't know if it's 80% or 90% of things I have today. Now, some of them took 10 years longer than I thought. Some took 15 years, but I got them all. So if I hadn't written it down, I never would have got it. So I would say the number one piece of advice to any entrepreneur would be write your freaking goals down. And then, and I just went through a session this week where not only do we write it, we had a stenographer write up, but now I'm going to take visuals around it. Because I think what Steve Jobs did was right. Our brain, we think in pictures. So it's one thing to look at your goals in words, but when you can put pictures around it, because our brain thinks in pictures, that's why we like the Mac operating system, it's icons.
Yeah.
So you get it 10 times quicker. So I believe this stuff should be taught in grade one and grade two and grade three and grade four, but I think it's all about goal setting. It's the most powerful tool that I've learned my whole life.
Yeah, in my circles, we talk about the fact that language is generative, right? We say something, you know, it's the beginning of making something happen. And creating those goals and writing it down all of a sudden makes it even more real, right? It's physically, you can see it. And this idea of visualizing it is a whole nother step. But that's how we all these things that you've worked on are generated from initially nothing.
Right. These are just ideas.
Yeah.
And I know some people don't agree with this, but I believe in sharing your goals with your friends and family and holding accountability. I had to lose weight once and I went to this Weight Watchers thing. And I'm like, I get why Weight Watchers works. Because every week you got to go to a meeting, they weigh you, they write it down, like there's accountability. So every week, there's no excuses. Like you can sit there and go, oh, whatever. But you got to go, you go for your weigh-in, you write down, and the numbers don't lie. So there's something about writing your goal down and then accountability, week in, week out. So if your friends and family can't keep you accountable, then you got a problem. So I do think you've got to clarify your goals, put visuals, and then have some kind of check-in so people are holding you accountable. Because look, we can justify anything. We can make excuses all day long, but you need some accountability. So I would say goal setting and accountability would be the most powerful tool I've learned.
Nice. I mean, it makes sense. It moves you forward. What's something you know now that you wish you had known in the beginning?
So I would say it's about work ethic. And I don't care how technologically superior we are. I don't care if Intel comes up with the 8th generation processor. I don't care what Google or Facebook or Amazon invent for us today. If you don't have the work ethic, it's all bullshit. It all falls apart. So I think what I've learned from, and I've been lucky to work with a lot of really rich, successful clients, self-made, they work their asses off and there's no shortcuts and it takes longer and it takes years of sacrifice. But we do live in this instant gratification world where people just think like, oh yeah, it just comes, nothing comes easy. It takes years of hard work and there's no shortcut. So I would say to you, it's about hard work. And if you refer to your parents, your grandparents, or great-grandparents, they understood what hard work was about. Our society and our culture, whether you're a baby boomer or millennial, we seem to have lost that. So I do think it's about hard work. So I would refer to hard work as something that I've learned. It's been reinforced to me over my life.
Who's a founder that you admire and why?
So I think it's Elon Musk because he's so damn smart. And I think anyone that grows up as a child reading one book a day and believing that you can do anything and you don't have to be an engineer, you don't just, you know, how did he get into you know, shooting rockets? He just read all the books about it. You know, I think it's about books. So he didn't become Elon Musk because of software. He became Elon Musk by just reading a lot. And then I think a lot about Steve Jobs and his walking meetings every day. There's so much to be said about just walking and talking. And I think great leaders get that innately. So I would say Elon Musk, if I had to pick one, because he believes that the impossible and has the work ethic to support it. And he self-educated himself. So I think that guy, and obviously I would always defer to Steve Jobs. And again, if there's nothing else, and you know, we know he was an asshole and we know all those things, but the culture he created with just walking and getting to talking to people, not just about writing tons of emails, I think these are lessons that we can all learn from.
Yeah, you picked basically two of my favorite. I worked at Apple for 7 years, mostly in retail. And so I would say I have a bias towards Steve Jobs, but also, you know, admire him. And Elon Musk, talk about building the future that you want. That's what he's doing constantly. Yes. And I think it's a great example of what you can accomplish if you say, I'm going to do this.
Right.
And I don't even know all of the things that go into it, but I have enough information to start. And as I build it, I'll learn.
Yeah. And I think telling people your great vision, and even if you're like halfway through the vision, like just doing it. And yeah, it's never going to be perfect, but I think there's a lot of people that are trying to be perfectionists and they're not getting that product out.
Yeah.
And they're shipping product and just going for it. So for sure. I think it's amazing.
Anyone that's listening, that's interested in following you or your work, where can they find you? How should they follow you?
Yeah. So our company name is really short and it's just N5R. So you can go to N like Nancy, five like number five, R like Robert.com. Just N5R.com or N5R.ai. And all of our social links are there. We're pretty active in terms of blogging and social media, but we really believe in transparency. Adam, and this interview will be there and everything we do is there. We really believe in complete and utter transparency. So we share everything we're doing. Even before we announce deals, we do deals, you can see exactly what we're doing. So we believe in like minds and working together. So we hope, and we've seen that people that get our vision want to work with us. And that's why we've been able to build our business, you know, now in 15 countries and five continents, because we're trying to find like-minded people.
Cool. And then can anyone follow you somewhere?
Yeah. So right off of the N5R.com, you can link to my Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, all those things. We're on the platforms, but 100%. And I would love that. I really, really appreciate getting to know you better and your audience.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Founder's Mind. Check back this week to listen to Roman on The Founder's Mind Tangent. Roman shares a big challenge on getting into AI. On the next full episode, I have Gira, the founder of Aleberry Creative. To make sure you don't miss any awesome insights, nuggets of wisdom, and tangents from guests of The Founder's Mind, be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and follow along on social at The Founder's Mind. To learn more about the past or future guests and listen to other episodes, you can visit thefoundersmind.com. I look forward to sharing future episodes with you all, and don't forget, rating and reviewing The Founder's Mind means a lot and is greatly appreciated. Until next time, take care.
Through all of this insanity and try to bring new ideas, make them a reality, illuminate inner thoughts, make it a priority to implement what you learn, what you get is what you be. In a world full of noise, hard to find that clarity to try to lead subtly, never full of vanity, and try to change something smaller, try to change humanity, power forward through the dark, founder's mind is what you see.